Wisconsin is on the eve of that most unusual of presidential primaries, the kind that is relevant on both the Democrat and Republican side. In case that wasn't otherwise apparent, four of the five remaining active candidates for the two parties were in Eau Claire in the past 48 hours. We'll talk about the presidential contests and that state Supreme Court race, and we'll also talk about how it all trickles down to other races, ranging from school referendums to county and municipal races, and just what impact the presidential fight might have on legislative races in the fall. This is The West Side, and today we look ahead to tomorrow's primary election. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Rich Kramer was called away to cover Donald Trump's appearance this morning in La Crosse, as he covered all four of the appearances by presidential candidates over the weekend in Eau Claire. We'll hear from Rich a little later in the show, but I'm filling in on the call-in show for today. We're joined by Professor Neil Krause. Neil Krause chairs the Political Science Department at UW River Falls. He's authored two books, the most recent of which is Majoritarian Cities, Policymaking and Inequality in Urban Politics. Neil Krause, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks very much for having me.
And we're hoping to be joined shortly by Mort Cyprys, who is a longtime political science contributor. We're having trouble connecting with Mort, but we're hoping to get him on the line here shortly. Let's remind you that, as always, we'd like to hear from you. Call 800-228-5615 to let us know what you think about having the national spotlight shining on this state and on this region. Well, Neil Krause, I'm old enough to remember when Wisconsin was either the first or one of the first of the presidential primaries, and we got a lot of attention, but that was decades ago, and the nomination contests are often sewn up now by the first Tuesday of April when Wisconsin holds its presidential primary. It's also the spring general election for the state of Wisconsin. So it's been a long time since we've had active races on both sides of the ticket come Wisconsin. And we've been doing a lot of poll watching. And a couple of polls around the Wisconsin presidential primary came out over the weekend. The CBS ballot tracker poll that was released yesterday shows Cruz with 43%, a 6-point lead over Donald Trump with 37%, and John Kasich has 18%. And a Loras College poll released Saturday shows more undecided voters, but also shows Cruz with a 7-point lead in this case over Trump and a 20-point lead on Kasich in Wisconsin. Now, that's a bit tighter than the Marquette poll of last week that showed Cruz with a 10% lead. So is that evidence that Trump is rallying?
Well, he's certainly making a tremendous effort, as are all the candidates, right? We've seen that in the last several days across the state and of course, today and tomorrow. It's interesting that the recent polls that you cite show it tightening a little bit from the Marquette poll last week, which showed about a 10% lead for Cruz. I think it's still, you know, difficult to predict. I mean, the even 10% when the leader has 40%, a 10% lead is really not that significant, particularly in comparison to some of the other polls. So I think it's. So it seems as if Cruz has the advantage. That's definitely, you know, the case. But at the same time, I wouldn't want to bet a lot of money that Cruz is certainly going to win.
Cruz, at his rally last night at the Florian Gardens in Eau Claire, said he really looks for Wisconsin to be a turning point.
Yeah, well, I think that,
as a national platform,
a national megaphone. Sorry, Neil. I wasn't clear about the fact I wanted to play that cut from Cruz.
Sure,
hang on.
Sure.
Let me start that again.
The entire country is looking to the state of Wisconsin. Wisconsin has a national platform, a national megaphone. And the results of this election on Tuesday are going to reverberate in states all across the country. If we stand together and unite, we will win this nomination. And we will win the general election, we will beat Hillary Clinton, and we will turn this country around.
So that's Ted Cruz commenting on his need to win Wisconsin. Do you agree, Neil Krause, that this is pretty critical for Ted Cruz?
I I think it's definitely critical for him. I think that if he doesn't win here, it becomes even more difficult. We have to, you know, keep in mind that he's still almost 300 delegates behind here as of today. So certainly if he doesn't win in Wisconsin, it makes it even more difficult. As to whether or not Wisconsin could represent a turning point, I mean, a few weeks ago, John Kasich won Ohio, and he's in, you know, a fairly close by state here in the Midwest, and he's still in third place. So I think what we've heard several times over the last 2-3 months that if this happens or that happens, that this will be the major turning point in the race, and it hasn't really occurred yet. I mean, there have been several instances where, you know, Trump has obviously lost a few and so forth, but I think if you look at the schedule for the next several weeks, New York is coming up on April 19th, several northeastern states, presumably Trump would do pretty well there. So I think it does become essential for Cruz, but whether or not it represents a real turning point, the next few weeks are going to answer that question.
And I'd like to welcome in our second political scientist guest. Mort Cypress has been an expert we've leaned on throughout my 3 decades at WPR when it comes to political analysis. And not only is he professor emeritus in political science at UW-Eau Claire, but he's been a volunteer producer and consultant for the West Side throughout its 14 years of existence. So, Mort Cypress, great to have you in the studio with us.
It's good to be here.
Now, Wisconsin is relevant. So last time we had active races on both sides of the ticket from Wisconsin, I can't remember, and I've been paying attention to this stuff for a long time.
It goes back longer than I can remember. Ever since a number of states moved forward in their dates for primaries,
right.
That's going back before to about 1980, actually. And Wisconsin became irrelevant because both parties had their candidates chosen.
Well, we were just talking about Ted Cruz saying Wisconsin could be a turning point for his campaign. Let's listen to a little bit from Donald Trump's rally in Eau Claire on Saturday night. He's talking about the importance of Wisconsin, but he makes the point that there are other states to come.
If we win Wisconsin, I think it's over. If I don't win it, I think, you know, we have a good chance because we're way up in New York, way up in New Jersey, way up in Pennsylvania. But I want Wisconsin to win it for me, okay?
So there's Donald Trump hoping for a win in Wisconsin. And Neil Kraus, is as we look at these polls, it looks like there's certainly some strength from Donald Trump in important states coming up.
Yeah, I think he's right on that. I think if you look at the regional, characteristics of the states here coming up, a number of northeastern New England states, West Virginia, presumably Trump might do pretty well there. And so I think he's right on that. I've looked at a few of the polls in some of the other states, and he's still, as far as I know, doing pretty well in the states ahead. So I think, you know, say what we want about Trump, I think that there's some truth in that statement.
The CBS poll that was released yesterday had this statistic, which I thought was maybe my favorite statistic yet of the campaign. The CBS poll says there's a certain segment of Wisconsin voters, 78% of whom think Donald Trump has gone too far in some of his statements. That's not 78% of eligible voters or even 78% of Republican voters. That's 78% of people who say they plan to vote for Donald Trump, who says that he doesn't always show discretion in his comments. What does that say about this election, Mort Cypress?
I'm not sure it says a whole lot. And I'm saying that because if you read through the fine print on that CBS poll, there's some real questions about their methodology. They start off in their sample with a self-selecting group of people on the Internet. And then they add in some telephone interviews, supposedly drawn more at random.
Hmm.
That makes that poll suspect. And even though its figures are close to what other polls have come up with, CBS poll said 2% difference between I'm sorry, on the Democratic side, 2% difference between right. Clinton and Sanders, a larger difference on the Republican side mm-hmm. with Cruz more ahead. But then when I go to that fine print and read about the methodology, I start scratching my head and said, did they come up with numbers by a guess?
Well, the whole idea of polling is a whole nother show, but I mean, it certainly is a way to get some attention is to have some up to the minute polls about these races. What I want to do is I want to promise folks who are calling in 800-228-5615. We're going to talk a little bit about the Republican race. We'll take a break. We'll talk more about the Democrats, and then we'll just flow into a broader conversation about the election in general. Now, staying with the Republicans, both Trump and Cruz are calling on John Kasich to get out of the race. Now, Kasich didn't show up in Eau Claire, but he's been to La Crosse. Now that's a new call from Trump, and he said in saying so that Kasich is costing him votes. Rich Kramer last night talked with Governor Walker at the Ted Cruz rally, and Governor Walker has these comments on the path to John Kasich for the nomination.
Well, you've got two candidates who mathematically can get to 1237 by the convention, Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. John Kasich's a good friend of mine. He's a fellow governor. I like John, but mathematically, he doesn't have a path.
Yet there's another poll out this morning, this one from Investors Business Daily, that shows Kasich is the only Republican candidate who beats Hillary Clinton nationally. Neither Cruz nor Trump can do that, according to the current numbers on this poll. So what role, Neil Krause, does Kasich play or hope to play in Wisconsin and beyond here?
Well, I would think that he's well aware of the fact that he can't get to the required number of delegates before the convention. I think what he's I would imagine what he's trying to do is, you know, are a couple things. One is just trying to prevent Trump from getting to that number and then hoping for some sort of contested convention. And two, I think he's probably thinking about if Republican wins, perhaps I might be a vice presidential selection or a cabinet selection. He's a guy that used to be in Congress, worked in the private sector, then became the governor of Ohio. So he's, you know, he's got a lot of experience that way. So I think he has a few different motivations, and I don't think he's unaware that he can't get to, you know, the magic number by the convention.
Mort Cypress, it's the first I've heard that Kasich may actually be taking votes away from Trump. Do you think that's a possibility?
I suppose that's a possibility, but it's hard to pin it down at this point. The polls don't tell us a whole lot about that. I do think that his strategy. Is what was just said, that in fact they'll not reach the magic number before the first ballot at the Republican convention, and that would lead to a movement towards the second ballot when none of the delegates are pledged as to who they're going to support, and that's Kasich's hope, and I think that both Cruz and Trump are probably afraid that if it goes to a second ballot, that both of them could possibly be shut out.
Governor Walker talked last night also about the prospects for an open convention.
If someone can get to 1237 before the convention, it'll obviously have to be an existing candidate. If they don't, that's ultimately up to the delegates. There's no criteria one way or the other. It could be one of the three. It could be somebody who ran before. It could be somebody who hasn't ever run for president before. And the beauty is that the people get to decide that, not the party leaders.
So as you said, Mort Cypress, everybody knows what the magic numbers are. Wisconsin has – been hearing on the Republican side that Wisconsin is winner-take-all, but I've been hearing some fudging on that lately. Is it really a winner-take-all? And if so, why are some states proportional and others like Wisconsin?
Well, first of all, Wisconsin is winner-take-all by congressional district. If you carry the congressional district, you get the three delegates. And this is for the Republican convention. Mm-hmm. You get the three delegates. And if you carry the entire state, you get another 12. So it's partially winner take all and possibly a proportional to the others.
All right. Well, that's helpful explanation. That's the first time I've heard that cleaned up for me, so I appreciate that. You're listening to The West Side. We're talking, we're previewing tomorrow's primary and general and Wisconsin general election and presidential primary that will be taking place, of course, voting all day tomorrow throughout the state of Wisconsin. We've been talking a lot about the Republican race. We'll get into the Democratic presidential race, and we'll also check in with Rich Kramer from La Crosse, where he's covering the Donald Trump rally. All that coming up on the West Side. I'm Dean Kallenbach, filling in for Rich.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Security Health Plan, offering health insurance for individuals and families, including a Medicare supplement plan available statewide. Information is available at securityhealth.org. Support also comes from Mayo Clinic Health System, encouraging families and friends to talk about advanced care planning. Information, guidance, and support resources are available at mayoclinichealthsystem.org.
We're back on the West Side. Wisconsin Public Radio is airing special coverage of the 2016 presidential race to keep you informed throughout the election season. You can tune in for candidate speeches, newsmaker interviews, updates from key candidate headquarters, and more. And tomorrow night, on the election night, WPR's Rob Ferret will host live coverage of Wisconsin's presidential primary and the race for state Supreme Court. Listeners will hear results and analysis from Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson and Wisconsin Public Television's Frederica Freiberg. The special coverage from WPR will air on both the NPR News and Classical Music Network and the Ideas Network, including this station, beginning at 8 o'clock tomorrow night. So tune in for that. We've talked about the Republicans quite a bit, shifting to the Democrats. The same two polls that we've been talking about, the Loras College poll, the CBS News poll, also are showing conflicting results on the Republican side. CBS News poll shows Sanders leading Clinton by 2 percentage points, while the Loras College poll shows Clinton leading Sanders by 6 in Wisconsin. Sanders is hoping for a win here to keep up his momentum. And Neil Krause, what is Bernie Sanders' path to the nomination at this point?
Well, I think it's difficult, but not impossible. I think mathematically, it's possible, and there's still a number of states that have yet to occur on the Democratic side as well. In terms of the conflicting results you pointed out just a moment ago, I think Wisconsin's harder to predict on the Democratic side. We talked about how Cruz has the advantage, even if it's not particularly large in some of the polls on the Republican side, but the Democratic side, I think, is more hard to predict, and so it'll be very interesting to see what the final numbers are here.
Mort Cypress?
It's very difficult to predict the final numbers, not only because it seems to be very close, but much of the polling that's done does not take into account a particular group who may have the final say in who carries the state. And that's that the people can register at the polls. None of the polls are able to identify those. They start with registered voters in during their samples. And so that becomes a problem for accuracy. We don't know who's going to get the late-breaking votes of people who are just first registering to vote on Election Day.
Both Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton appeared in Eau Claire on Saturday afternoon. Let's hear a little bit from each of them.
And with your help and a large voter turnout on Tuesday, I believe we're going to do just fine here in Wisconsin.
The most important goal is to win in November. And I believe I am the person best able to withstand whatever the Republicans have planned.
So Hillary Clinton trying to focus on the potential Republican opponent for the fall. Mort Cyprys, does that make her look more presidential, or does she risk putting the cart before the horse in not focusing on Bernie Sanders?
Well, she's first making the assumption. It's a dangerous assumption, but making the assumption that she's going to win the nomination. And with that assumption, she feels it becomes very important to take on the likely Republican candidate. And that's why we see her turning to attacking Trump quite a bit in her speeches. And incidentally, Sanders this week has begun to do the same thing. And they perhaps both are attacking Trump more than they are attacking each other in at least some of the statements that are being made.
That same Investor's Business Daily poll, which came out today, it's a national poll. It shows that Clinton in a national race losing to both Cruz and Trump at this time, while Sanders can beat both Cruz and Trump. Neil Krause, should the superdelegates here be paying attention to those polls and maybe looking to shift their alliances to give Bernie Sanders a little better chance to make things happen on the Democratic side?
You know, that's a great question. Sanders has certainly been citing a lot of those kinds of polls for several weeks in his speeches, saying that, you know, one-on-one he does better against Trump than Clinton does. You know, whether or not superdelegates are going to pay close attention to those polls, I would suspect many of them are not, although I certainly am not, you know, positive about that. I think it's also tough at this early date to you know, rely too much on polls that for two races which are not settled yet, and saying if this candidate goes against this other candidate. I mean, we can look at the last several presidential elections, and, you know, we had President Giuliani, we had President Condoleezza Rice, we had, you know, and all these other candidates. I mean, it was probably earlier in the process where those polls were projecting those people winning, but I really think it you have to get two nominees from two parties before those polls, at least in my opinion, before they become more valid in terms of what we're trying to get at there.
But Mort Cyprys, whether you put a lot of stake into polls at this stage of the process, it's got to be unsettling for the party leadership on both sides. I mean, obviously the Republicans are tearing their hair out, but even on the Democratic side, where it appears that Hillary Clinton has a fairly substantial lead, to have Bernie Sanders rallying like he is and winning states, that's not exactly the road to unification that the Democratic leadership would expect to put together.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we need to understand that the superdelegates may not have to come to that kind of decision. For Sanders to begin to get close to the magic number for the nomination, he has to get well over 60% of the vote in each of the primaries, and all but one state are having primaries from here on in. He has to get over 60% to be competitive, to be able to start telling superdelegates, hey, look, I'm the stronger candidate. The likelihood of that happening, well, I guess it's possible, but he would have to pick up an enormous amount of support in many much larger states than Wisconsin, states like New York and Pennsylvania and California. And to get 60% of the vote in those states is going to be quite a challenge for him.
You're listening to The West Side. Our guests today are political scientists Mort Cyprys and Neil Krause. And I am Dean Kallenbeck, not the normal voice you hear hosting this program. Rich Kramer is in La Crosse. He's covering the Donald Trump rally now underway in La Crosse. It is the fifth presidential rally Rich will cover in the past 48 hours. I talked to him by phone last hour as he was waiting for the candidate to take the stage, and I wanted to get Rich's take on the flurry of activity here in western Wisconsin. And he opened by setting the scene for this morning's rally in La Crosse.
Yeah, going by the La Crosse Center, there's a long line of people waiting to get in across the street, much like what happened in Eau Claire. Across the street is a line of protesters with signs. One of the signs, I think it's probably one of the most benevolent protest signs I've ever seen. It's a, Mr. Trump, be nice.
So let's talk about, because this, you're covering the Trump rally. This will be your fifth presidential political rally in 48 hours. Pretty amazing. You saw four in Eau Claire over the weekend, Ted Cruz last night, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, and Donald Trump all in Eau Claire on Saturday. Give me your general observations of what you saw and the differences in the rallies and the differences in the speeches.
Sure. Well, there was a lot of excitement overall. I'd say the most the rally with the most excitement in total, I don't know if you can say that, but it was the Bernie Sanders rally that was early at about 10 o'clock Sunday or Saturday morning at Zorn Auditorium at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. It was like a rock concert. There were three different bands that played. The crowd was just excited. A lot of young people there. Really, really raucous. And then at the Hillary Clinton rally, still a lot of excitement, a much different crowd, a little older, more women than I saw at the other rally. And it was a little more, it was a little different. I can't put my finger on it. It wasn't such a, like a Woodstock-type atmosphere. It was more restrained. And then Donald Trump's rally, it was very, very, very high energy. People were chanting, Trump, Trump, Trump. They were chanting, build that wall. All kinds of things going on there. And then when the Donald took the stage, of course, people went ballistic. But a lot of excitement. At the Trump rally, it was a lot more men than women. And I didn't see many people any minority groups, but it's been really amazing to see how many people are coming out to see these candidates. So I think that really speaks to what the Government Accountability Board is expecting to see in terms of turnout for the primary.
Yeah, and Saturday was not a pleasant day to be standing outside waiting in line to get into a building.
No. Some of the people I talked to at the Bernie Sanders rally, the first one, it had just snowed the night before, but they were waiting for two and a half hours to get in, and they were shivering, literally shivering.
I watched the live streams of all of them, and I thought the introducers were interesting. Bernie Sanders was introduced by Justin Vernon, the front man for the Grammy Award-winning band Bon Iver, kind of a hip, probably the hippest of the introducers. Hillary Clinton was introduced by U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin. Ted Cruz was introduced by Governor Tommy Thompson and had some Carly Fiorina and Mike Lee and some other Republican celebrities there. Donald Trump just showed up on stage.
He did. He really did. I'm going to make a correction, though. I hate to do this to you, Dean.
That's okay.
Governor Scott Walker, not Tommy Thompson.
Oh, my. Yeah, Thompson is supporting Kasich, which is interesting, too. So, yeah, you're right.
That is interesting, yeah. Donald Trump did have someone speak before him. It was, a top staffer of his, Stephen Miller, who was an aide to Jeff Sessions. But you're right. I mean, there's not much... I don't think you need to pump up the crowd a whole lot to get them ready for Donald Trump. I mean, he kind of did himself. The campaign music that they've been playing has been really, really interesting. Donald Trump walked on stage to House of Pain's "Jump Around," mm-hmm. which I wouldn't have expected. Maybe it was a nod to the Badgers tradition, but it's just always fascinating to see and to listen to what music these campaigns pick.
Now, this Trump appearance in La Crosse that you're attending, that hasn't been in the cards for a long time, has it? It's a fairly new announcement, is it not?
Yeah, they've a lot of these campaign announcements have been kind of spur of the moment. I found out about this. Our Wisconsin Public Radio's political reporter Sean Johnson. I mean, he's been all over this campaign mm-hmm. stuff, but. I got the note last night at like 9 o'clock when I was leaving the Trump or the Ted Cruz rally that Trump was going to be in La Crosse. So not much had lead time, I should say.
Well, I was going to say you'll probably get a chance to nap after tomorrow night. I think things should calm down a little bit in Wisconsin. Rich Kramer, thanks for taking some time to join us, and look forward to hearing your report on the Donald Trump rally from La Crosse today.
Thanks for having me, Dean. It's kind of neat being on this side of the program.
Yeah, welcome to the West Side, Rich.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. So that's Rich Kramer from last hour. Donald Trump is now speaking at the La Crosse Center before a large crowd there. You are tuned to the West Side. We're previewing tomorrow's primary. 800-228-5615 is your way to join the conversation. 800-228-5615. Also joining us in the conversation are Neil Krause. He chairs Political Science Department at UW River Falls, and Mort Cypress, Professor Emeritus of Political Scientist at UW Eau Claire. Mort Cypress, Wisconsin has an open primary, and that means you don't have to show any party ID to vote in either primary. In the past, that's led to some voting in the opposite party's race in an effort to upset the apple cart. How likely is that sort of mischievous crossover voting for tomorrow's primary?
I think there's likely to be some, although I'm not sure I would call it mischievous for a particular reason. Studies that have been done of the Wisconsin primary in the past, and I think it'll hold for this one as well, those who cross over, that is, those who lean towards one party but vote in the other party's primary, do so because they like the particular candidate on the other side. We're seeing some of that happening in a few places where it's possible to do that this year. And this is basically with the Trump supporters. We find that a number of them, maybe 10-15% of the Trump supporters, are people who might otherwise vote on the Democratic side and are excited by Trump. And very often they're also first-time voters, people who have not really been a part of the electoral process in previous years. So, yes, I think there can be crossover voting. I think there's likely to be some for Trump this year. At the same time, they're doing it because they're attracted to Trump, not because they don't like all of the people on the Democratic side.
Mm-hmm. Neil Krause, I heard a report on NPR's Morning Edition from a researcher at Tufts University that Wisconsin typically has a larger turnout among college-age students than most cases in elections, and she expects a particularly strong showing tomorrow. If that's the case, what impact would a large turnout among young people mean to tomorrow's presidential primary?
I think it definitely helps Sanders. There's no question about that. If you look at the results so far in many other states, he's clearly, you know, doing substantially better. I mean, I haven't seen numbers recently, but I mean, he's beating Hillary Clinton by a tremendous percent among younger voters. So I think it helps Sanders for sure. On the Republican side, I think it's a little bit more difficult to predict. It might favor Trump. I've not seen numbers to that effect, but that would be my hunch. But I think it's the age breakdown perhaps is a little bit more difficult to kind of predict with any certainty on the Republican side. I mean, I know that Trump is doing, you know, better among older voters at his rallies, but as we mentioned earlier in the show, with same-day voter registration, election day registration, if you get a large number of young people showing up and registering and voting on election day, I think that's what makes the outcome on the Republican side a little bit more challenging to kind of wrap our minds around at this point.
Mort Cypress, this is the first major election in which Wisconsin's voter ID law will be in place. Is that going to have any impact on the polls or how hard it will be to vote as far as lines at the polls, that sort of thing, do you think?
Well, there'll be segments of the population who are disadvantaged by the voter ID because they were not able to get a voter ID. In some instances, they may forget to bring one with them, especially if they don't drive and they depend on public transportation or other means of getting to the polls. But there will be some people who could not get because they could not find the documents that were needed to prove your residence. They could not get what was needed for the voter ID law. We won't know just how many there are of that sort. Because On Election Day itself, the only polling that will be done will be the people coming out of the polling place. It will be the exit polls. So the people affected by voter ID will already have been screened out of the process at that point.
Well, we've spent our program so far talking about the presidential primary, which is certainly the head of the ticket, but there are actually real elections happening, not just a primary to look at nominations for presidential candidates, but there are some real elections that affect real decisions among them, and probably chief among them statewide, is the Supreme Court race. We'll talk about that coming up after the break. We've got a primary preview here on the West Side. I'm Dean Kallenbach, in for Rich Kramer. Join us at 800-228-5615.
Support for WPR comes from Steep & Brew, a Wisconsin coffee roaster dedicated to delivering truly fresh, premium coffee to local grocers. Coffee roasted today is delivered within 72 hours. Steep & Brew, coffee done right. More at steepandbrew.com. WPR connects you to communities in Wisconsin and around the world. Ideas that challenge and inspire you. News you can trust. Events you won't want to miss. You'll find them all right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.
We're back on the West Side. The primary election tomorrow is the focus, and we've talked a lot about presidential primary, but the one big statewide race is for state Supreme Court justice. And in that one, Rebecca Bradley is trying to keep her seat on the court, while Joanne Kloppenburg is trying to replace that incumbent. It's officially a nonpartisan race, but differences in political ideology are certainly apparent in this one. Before we turn to our guest political scientist, I'd like to take a caller who has been waiting online for a long time. Willem of Colfax is on. Willem, thanks for waiting, and here's your opportunity to talk about that Supreme Court race.
Yes, I just wanted to stress how important this is, because unlike the presidential elections, which are also very important, those are four-year terms. This is a 10-year term on our Supreme Court, which and the candidates of Rebecca Bradley has been appointed to three positions on the court, and all of them have been Walker appointments. She's obviously, even though this race is supposed to be nonpartisan, she's clearly one of Walker's people. So I think if they control the legislature, you know, the Senate and the whole legislature and the governor, and then through this appointment, the Supreme Court, 10 years we'll have of this you know, this administration, this one-party rule, which I don't think is good for democracy, and I don't think this woman is either qualified to be a state, you know, a Supreme Court justice from her, you know, let alone her college writings, but just her personal experience and her experience as an actual judge, three appointments each made by Walker. So I would hope that people really pay attention to this and look into the background of the judges and, you know, not make this decision on partisan issues, but on who's really qualified and how this could affect our state for the upcoming 10-year term.
Mort Cypress, as you look at this Supreme Court race, a lot of advertising in this one, Kloppenburg and Bradley, a lot of television advertising, newspaper advertising. Where do you see this one falling, and what are the key issues here?
That's going to depend on the undecideds. It appears going into it that among those who have decided, Bradley is slightly ahead, not by a very large amount, just by 4, 5, 6 points ahead, and usually that's within the margin of error. So that leads it to the undecideds, who are enormous. There are about a quarter of the people in these surveys are still undecided. Many of them will not vote at all. I think the safest prediction is that the voter turnout for the Supreme Court race will be lower than the turnout for the presidential primary. But of those undecideds who do vote, we don't know which way they're going to go, because they didn't know which way they were going to go. Mm-hmm. Many of them weren't even aware there was a Supreme Court race.
Yeah, but if they're at the polls anyway, they may vote. Neil Carlos, any thought of what impact of high turnout would have on a race like state Supreme Court?
You know, that's a good question. As Mort just pointed out, the large number of undecideds in the Supreme Court race are really going to be the key variable here. And, I think that, I don't know, I would wonder if it might help Kloppenburg a little bit if the turnout was larger. A lot of folks don't really pay close attention to judicial races. I mean, you know, those of us who do this stuff for a living and write about it are you know, tuned in all the time. But there's a number of folks, you know, who will vote tomorrow who probably won't even know the names of these two people until they vote. And as Mort said, you will get fewer votes in this race, even though the same, you know, number of people, they just decide not to vote in this race. But I would think, again, just as a matter of a guess here, I would think that a larger turnout might help Kloppenburg in the end.
Now, due to a recent law change, school districts have to hold referendums in general during normal election cycles. And that means there are several school spending referendums on the ballot for tomorrow. Last week's West Side focused on those, a few of those. But here in western Wisconsin, those districts include Barron, Bloomer, Cumberland, Ellsworth, Hudson, Lake Holcomb, Somerset, Spring Valley. I think there are 72 statewide school referendum ballots for generally for funding. The presidential race may bring folks to the polls there who haven't been following that local school funding issue. Mort Cypress, how might that affect the chance of those referendums passing?
It'll probably increase the chance. It's more likely to be people who have at least a degree of concern about school districts. There's been much in the press about the difficulties that have been created for school districts in terms of funding, that the state policies especially have led to a shortage of funds for school districts. And so you're likely to get it. And also past history tells us something. In past years, the people looking to spend more at the school level had about a 50-50 chance of getting that through in a referendum. In the last couple of years, almost all of the referendums for more funding have passed. That's an indication that there's been a shift, at least for the time being, in what may happen in these referenda.
Does this large turnout have any effect on other? I mean, there are races for circuit court judge. There are races for city council and mayor, county board, town board, school board. These types of races, mm-hmm. are they affected in any way? They're nonpartisan. So if I come in as, you know, as a Democrat, it doesn't mean that it's not apparent to me which of those people on the ballot are Democrat, which are Republican, Mort Cypress.
Well, name recognition will play a role so that more people coming to the polls, if there's a more familiar name on the ballot for city council or school board, they're likely to pick up some votes. I think that's where the larger turnout would make a difference.
Now, one of your specialties, Neil Krause, is local elections and sort of the demographic mix of what goes on there. As you look at what's going on in Wisconsin in this April election, anything stand out to you as something we should be watching or trends that you're seeing in general in local races?
You know, I think what we talked about a minute ago is going to be interesting to see on the referenda question if there's a pattern there, if the large number of them are voted yes, in other words, if they pass, then I think that would, you know, that would constitute as close as we could have to a trend. You know, I think that in many local races, I think a lot of folks, especially nonpartisan local races, will just sort of ask themselves, are things going okay? Is there anything really wrong with my city or my town or my school district? And in most cases, people are going to say no. Things seem to be going reasonably well, and incumbents are probably reelected. In a lot of these local races, there'll be incumbents that are unopposed. And, you know, I think that, you know, local politics doesn't really become an issue particularly if you're not in a larger city. It doesn't really become an issue for a lot of folks unless you know, something comes up that you feel is going to really have an impact on your town, some big development project, some big, you know, spending project or idea for the school district. But in the absence of you know, issues like that, I think most people just kind of look at their community and might vote for incumbents if things seem to be going reasonably okay, and then pay closer attention to actual proposals of candidates higher up, state level, federal, presidential, that sort of thing.
If you'd like to get in on our conversation about tomorrow's primary election and spring general election for the state of Wisconsin, 800-228-5615 is the number for you to call. If you get in the next couple of minutes, we can probably get you on the air. We're going to move now to a call. This is Mary Jo in Eau Claire. Mary Jo, thanks for joining us.
Well, hi, Dean, and hi, Mark.
Well, hi, Mary Jo.
Wagner here. Yes, used to be covering elections from the public radio booth, but now I'm out and on my own.
Well, tell us what your perspective is on these campaign visits we've seen over the past. Did you get a chance to attend any of them?
I did. I decided on Saturday I'm going to see if I can get to all three. So
oh, cool.
It was just an amazing experience. We got down there at 8:30 to see Bernie Sanders' crowd, and as some of our listeners may recall, it was sort of a mini blizzard, and the wind chills were low, and so we really dressed up, and so we stood in line for like 2 hours, and I guess my sense was it was amazing to see all the students, many of them not prepared for the cold weather, to stand in line for a couple hours, and yet were quite persistent at staying there. And everybody of that 3,000 or so people had to stand in a long line. So I was quite impressed by that.
Yeah, I had heard that it was lined up all the way up to the getting up onto the hill up Garfield Avenue there, which is quite a stretch from Zorn Arena.
Oh, I know. And there was a man standing on the end of the bridge with holding a flag, and the flag was running parallel to the street. Yeah. The wind was so strong.
Yeah.
So, yes, speaking of hearing your conversation about the referendum, I was kind of wondering how many students are going to say to vote for one of the presidential candidates and then will be faced with a referendum vote, how that could affect.
Mort Cypress, do you have some thoughts on that?
I think that the students predominantly will pass over not only the referendum questions but the other local elections as well. They're simply not going to know the names of those candidates, and the kind of publicity about the local races, including the referenda, have been in the especially the local newspapers, mm-hmm. and the students are not that attentive to the local newspapers. So I think there's less likelihood of their actually participating in it. There's one other factor that's involved, and this is less so for the referenda and more for the local officials. Ballot position can make a difference. The candidate who is listed first on the ballot can pick up around 1% more votes as a result of that position. And so if you look at the ballots, you look at the sample ballots that have been in the paper, you can get an idea of who has a slightly better chance of winning mm-hmm. in those races.
That's mm-hmm.
And on the judges, you were talking about those too. We did see the judges themselves and others, volunteers with their staff, but we saw the judges themselves at the Sanders going through that line, passing out and shaking hands. So they were really out there.
And that's the Eau Claire County Circuit Court Judge race, Many Deeds versus Wright, right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Sorry, that's right. That would be for Eau Claire County,
yeah.
Yes. And we went off to the Bernie Sanders and went on to stand in line to see Hillary Clinton as well, and she ended up being an hour late. So our plan to get off to the Trump thing got off an hour, but we did go. We went off and stood in line for an hour and a half, but we did not get into the Trump event. It was full. The venue was a smaller one for all the thousands of us that were standing there, but
Well, we appreciate the report, Mary Jo. And those who may not be aware, this is Mary Jo Wagner, the original host of this program, The West Side, and hosted it for a good 8 years. We appreciate your joining us this morning, Mary Jo. We've had all three people who've ever hosted this show this morning. So that's kind of fun.
I thought that was so nice. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mary Jo. Let's take one more call. This is Tim in Eau Claire. Tim, thank you for joining us.
Hi, I'm wondering what the guests believe will happen with the Bradley part of the race. What I mean by that is, will the Trump supporters that will come out to support Trump bolster Bradley? Because it sounds like a lot of the comments that, you know, a lot of people may see as negative comments may actually appeal to Trump voters. It sounds like something that that Trump could say, specifically referring to her anti-gay remarks in the past. It sounds like something Trump could say, and that would bolster his support amongst his supporters.
And Neil Krause, I don't know if you've received a lot of advertising in the River Falls area about that Bradley Kloppenburg race, but one of the key factors is some anti-gay comments that Judge Bradley made many years ago as a young person that have been brought out as part of the advertising. What are your thoughts on Tim's question there?
It's a really interesting question. I would say that if the Trump voters are aware of that debate and those comments, I think Tim is, what he's getting at is probably correct. It's not going to hurt Bradley in their eyes, given everything that he has said. But then there's the question of the level of awareness of the different races. So, you know, some people are tuned in to the presidential race only and not so much races below, and we talked about a few minutes ago about the large number of undecideds in the judicial race. So, but I would imagine that those who are aware probably it would certainly not hurt her in many of their eyes.
Well, I thought we might get to look ahead at the November elections and how this primary might affect it. We're out of time. We'll have another chance to do that. Neil Krause, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
And thanks also to Mort Cypress.
It's always good to be here.
Larry Mueller is up next, of course. We have to say thank you to Debbie Brown for her on-air production for today's program and to Jessica Wickland for her publicity and social media help. Don't forget election coverage tomorrow night on Wisconsin Public Radio, anchored by Rob Ferret with Sean Johnson and Frederica Freiberg providing expert analysis. Listeners will hear results tomorrow night starting at 8 on this station. I'm Dean Collin, back in for Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us. This is The West Side.